you notice I haven't been commenting a lot on politics lately. But here's one thing I know. If you have to win a campaign by dividing people, you're not going to be able to govern them.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin, episode number 237, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So, let's talk. I want to get into the shutdown, but not the things that have been hammered to death in most of the media. I want to get into the facts about, first of all, how this kind of thing works. I've talked about the budget on this show in the past, and the fact that we are operating under a series of CRs right now, which are continuing resolutions. And if there's anything that the Republican Party has shown that they're good at, it's marketing and messaging. And if there's anything that they have shown that they are absolutely not awesome at, it's going to be governing.
The DACA kids, the wall, his mind, you can't separate the DACA kids and Shane Ryan. By the way, the DACA kids are not kids anymore either. They're about 24 years old in many cases, and the employment rate among them is like 25%. And it's not 800,000. The number is 3.6 million. You understand? Not the same people, but they need a certain number of illiterate, uneducated, can't speak English, poor people to whom an entry-level job picking crops is the best day of their lives. And the Democrat Party is preparing to shut down the government over to make sure those people continue to get into the country free of charge.
So peep that. Just the words he said. The Democrat Party. Okay, let's break this down. The Democrat Party. So they say Democrat, rat. So they emphasize the rat part. It's not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. But they say Democrat Party. So they can really, really drive that home. And then they say they need these uneducated, scary, right? Coming over the border, scary. And none of it's really about the substance of this. See, if the Democrats had control of both houses of Congress and the presidency, and they said that the Republicans played any role in the shutdown, the media would be losing their damn minds. The unfortunate news about the shutdown is that the polling is already out, and this is according to SurveyMonkey, and 38% of people blame the Democrats. 39% of people blame the president, and 18% blame the Republicans, when 100% of this, 100% of this belongs to the Republicans. Let me get into this.
Thousands of lives are in limbo because of immigration policy, and every day at airports around the country, families are literally being torn apart.
Next, we're going to be speaking with Cindy Garcia. She just said goodbye to her husband of 15 years after he was ripped away from her and their children. This happened yesterday, the day we observe Martin Luther King. It's extraordinary. He lives in the United States, and he has lived here for over 30 years.
From the party of family values, the sound of a family being destroyed for absolutely no reason. This from the Detroit Free Press. His arms wrapped around his wife and two teenage children. Jorge Garcia's eyes welled up as he looked into their eyes one last time near the entrance to the airport security gate. His wife, Cindy Garcia, cried out while his daughter, Salil, 15, sobbed into Garcia's shoulder as they hugged with two U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents keeping a close eye on them. After living 30 years in the United States, Jorge Garcia, a 39-year-old landscaper from Lincoln Park, Michigan, was deported on Martin Luther King weekend to Mexico. A move, his supporters say, is another example of immigrants being unfairly targeted by the Trump administration. An undocumented family member brought Jorge Garcia to the U.S. when he was just 10 years old. Today he has a wife and two children, all of whom are U.S. citizens. Here is another thing. He works. Here's another thing. He pays taxes. Here's another thing. He has absolutely no criminal record. And as Rushbo was saying there, the DACA children, they're not children anymore. It's true. They're not. They came here as children. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that's DACA. They came here as children. They've never lived anyplace else. So my mother's side of the family is Native American. So they're from America. Okay, so that's half of me. The other half is from Ireland. This would be no different than if somebody went ahead and picked me up, dropped me in the middle of Ireland and said, go ahead and make it, laddie. I wouldn't know a damn thing. I don't speak the language. I don't even speak the damn accent. I'm crap at my Irish accent. I don't know much about the culture. I know about all the stereotypes, but go ahead and just plop me, but we're not going to do that. See, because Irish people are white. I talked about this a lot on last week's show. The president is failing on 1,000 different fronts. He's finding positive things to say anytime he finds himself in front of a microphone. But what he's doing now is trying to hold on to the last little bit of his base that he has. And that base is made up of nothing, and I mean nothing, but hardcore racists.
Did you say that you wanted more people to come in from Norway? Did you say that you wanted more people?
Thank you very much.
Is that true?
Thank you very much. I want them to come in from everywhere. Everywhere. Thank you very much, everybody.
Just Caucasian or white countries, sir, or do you want people to come in from other parts of the world where there are people of color?
Jim, thank you.
Did you? That was great. So the reporter asked him, do you only want people coming in from Caucasian countries? Do you only want, and he goes, no, I want people coming in from everywhere, which of course in the conservative stratosphere made heads explode for a little while. Because remember, they don't want people coming in from everywhere, only the white countries. We're not afraid of the Russians having babies down in Florida. We're not afraid of the Mexicans, but the Canadians coming from the north. We're not afraid of people moving from Norway because they don't freaking want to move here from Norway. Only afraid of the brown people in the country, the African Americans, the Latinos. They're only afraid of the brown folk. So the comments that the president made a couple of weeks ago, effectively blowing up any of the immigration talks that we were supposed to be having when he called all of those African countries, S-hole countries, that just went off like a bomb, and it didn't just blow up the media, it blew up all the talks, and it made it impossible for us to go into this. So, March 5th, that's the day that the Dreamers are no longer protected under DACA. So the Republicans haven't passed a budget. And a couple of months ago, the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, expired. The Republicans went ahead and let it expire. They put a couple month extension on it, but the extension was set to blow up at the exact same time that the government closes. And then, of course, they decided not to deal with DACA at all. They're just going to let that go because the pictures of people who came here as children and have lived here for the last several decades and know no other country other than this one, the pictures of those people being thrown the hell out for no reason whatsoever other than to appease his white supremacist base, that kind of thing is really what they're counting on to hold on to their base in 2018. They're not trying to govern all of us. They're only trying to govern for this one group of people. But Trump is trying. Oh yeah, he's trying to make it seem like he's a friend of the African American community. We'll get back into CHIP and DACA here in just a little bit. So obviously those of African American descent felt slighted by his comments. And he recently gave a speech in Pennsylvania. He was there backing a conservative candidate running for Congress this year. And while he was there, he decided to give a speech about how awesome the economy is doing. And he singled out women and African Americans specifically in his economic speech.
Jobs are back. Black unemployment is the best it's ever been in recorded history. It's been fantastic, and it's the best number we've had with respect to black unemployment. We've never seen anything even close, so we're very honored by that.
He has trouble even black. So unemployment is down across the board. The Republicans haven't passed a budget. So we are, in effect, still dealing under the exact same budget that Obama had us under. That was the last administration to pass a budget. We have had four different CRs. So the government shutdown is over. We are under another continuing resolution. So by the time this show comes out, there will be two more weeks to the next government shutdown. Mark my words. So these continuing resolutions, by and large, are just keeping going what we already have. Sometimes the Republicans or the Democrats, whoever's pushing the CR to pass, will add things to them. But it looks like these ones that have passed in recent months are really just continuing the Obama budget. So the Republicans knew that this was coming. They absolutely planned for this. Chuck Schumer went to the White House the day of to try to stop the shutdown from happening by talking with the president. And the way Schumer tells it is he gets in the room and he says, okay, we'll give you your wall, but you got to give us some more time on DACA. And he says, and then the president says, okay, we'll give you some more time on DACA. And after he talks with Trump for a little while, Trump says, oh, you know what? No time on DACA. And then he says, so no money for the wall. And then he goes ahead and leaves the White House, and Schumer gets on the floor of the Senate and says, the president can't take yes for an answer. And he absolutely does not know what he wants. Proof in point. So I'm on Donald J. Trump's mailing list. And as soon as the shutdown happened, all of his supporters, donor list, all of them got a video in their inbox from the president. So two things happened. They got this video. His supporters got this video, and then they changed the White House outgoing message. I'm going to give you both of those now. And inside of that email that his supporters got was a very slickly produced, horribly racist ad that only went out to Trump supporters or people on the list, like me.
That's illegal immigrant Luis Bracamontes, charged with murdering two police officers.
I wish I could kill one of those motherfuckers.
It's pure evil. President Trump is right. Build the wall. Deport criminals. Stop illegal immigration now. Democrats who stand in our way will be complicit in every murder committed by illegal immigrants. President Trump will fix our border and keep our families safe.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I don't particularly care for it. But when this happened, I had to jump on and see exactly what was happening. Now, that's the audio from the ad, so you can't see what's going on. But what it opens up with is a convicted murderer in court talking about how he killed a cop, and he's going to go ahead and do it again. The guy's got tattoos. He's got brown skin. It's really all the conservatives need. So I jump on social media, and I go to my usual right-wing pages, and they're all sharing memes that are split screens. On the left side, you'll see a troop, you know, sort of maybe standing with the sun at his back, you know, holding his gun or, you know, hands at his side or hugging his kids before he goes off to war. And then on the right side, you'll see Mexicans, heavily tattooed, maybe wearing tank tops, mean mugging, really grimacing looks on their face. And the text on the left side will say that the Democrats shut down the government to deprive, you know, these people on the left, which are the troops, of pay, so that these people on the right, these heavily tattooed Mexicans, can get in. And this was the horribly racist meme that was shared over and over. Now, being Latin, And having brown skin and being and heavily covered in tattoos does not make you a criminal. But if you are a criminal, you are eligible for automatic deportation. You are not eligible for the DACA program. And nobody is trying to let all of these people in. But this is the racist base that they're trying to appeal to. And they did so with this ad as well. Now, that part wasn't illegal because they did that through the Donald J. Trump website. But this next thing that I'm going to play that the president did, this was illegal. When you called the White House comment line, which these guys aren't real keen on you using anyway because they don't care what you think, you got this message.
Thank you for calling the White House. Unfortunately, we cannot answer your call today because congressional Democrats are holding government funding, including funding for our troops and other national security priorities, hostage to an unrelated immigration debate. Due to this obstruction, the government is shut down. In the meantime, you can leave a comment for the president at www.whitehouse.gov/contact. We look forward to taking your calls as soon as the government reopens.
The Logan Act. Every single member of Congress has an office separate from their official government office. And that is where they go several hours a day and beg for money, dial for dollars. They call up contributors and supporters, and they try to get money out of them so that they can win re-election. If you're a senator, it's $10,000 a day that you have to earn for every day that you work as a $10,000 a day. That's how much it costs you to remain in your job that pays, I think, $185,000 a year. You have to get $10,000 a day from your donors in order to continue running for that job. So if your constituents are paying you $185,000 and your donors are paying you several million dollars a year, who do you think you're going to be more accountable to? But I digress. Obviously, that's a whole nother problem. So they have these separate offices that they have to pay rent on. And it's nothing but a desk and a phone by and large. I know I'm painting a really lovely picture here. Because they can't make those kinds of calls from their official offices. Because it would be a violation of the Logan Act. It's a crime. When the White House decided to use the official White House line and make that the outgoing message, the outgoing partisan message, blaming the Democrats. Once you're the president, you're supposed to be the president of everybody. Once you're a congressman, you're supposed to be the congressman for everybody. And you're supposed to listen to your constituents. When he made that outgoing message, he violated the Logan Act. And nothing's going to happen about it. Because the people that are supposed to do something about it, they don't really care that he does this.
I ask the American people to understand this. The only people standing in the way of keeping the government open are Senate Democrats. Whether there is a government shutdown or not is now entirely up to them.
This campaign went on for pretty heavily for quite a few days before the government actually shut down. They get the message ready. They get the ad ready. They get Paul Ryan out there. The Democrats are trying to shut down the government. Every single bit of this is absolutely planned this way. The Republicans know that we are inside of an election year. And they know that they're looking at a bloodbath because, one, they can't govern. Two, of course, David Duke is president. And so they know that their prospects for the fall are not looking great. So this is a way of trying to claw back. This is a PR thing. This is a way of trying to claw back some of that favorable opinion from the public.
And the Democrats are willing to shut down the government, not over the legal protection for the DACA population. We all agree to that. But willing to shut down the government because they don't want future flows of illegal immigration. They don't want future flows of arbitrary, unskilled legal immigration. That doesn't make much sense to me, and I suspect it won't make much sense to the American people.
What do you make of the president meeting with Chuck Schumer today? Just the two of them, about 90 minutes, it sounds like.
Well, I hope the president can talk some sense into Senator Schumer so we can avoid the Schumer shutdown.
And there it is, the marketing, the Schumer shutdown. And then that was the thing that was spread, the Schumer shutdown, the Schumer shutdown, the Schumer shutdown. The entire time that the government was closed, the Democrats were trying to find a way to end it. And the Republicans were jumping in front of cameras, you know, going to their constituents. Trump wasn't even planning on staying in D.C. the night of the shutdown. He had plans to go to Mar-a-Lago. And then finally, probably by the time the 50th person told him, sir, this looks bad. The government shuts down and you're in Mar-a-Lago and you're golfing like you do every weekend. It looks bad. So he finally decided to stay. They've got ads. They've got a talking point. They've got a hashtag, the Schumer shutdown. The minute the government shuts down, bam, pop on over to Twitter. The top two trending things are the Trump shutdown, hashtag Trump shutdown, hashtag GOP shutdown. But they don't stop there. They begin hitting the TV cameras. You know, Fox and Alex Jones and pretty much anyone in CNN, anyone else that will let them on, they go, God dang it, the troops, the dang gum troops. They don't want the troops to get paid. They hate the troops. Why did they hate the troops so much? Why do they, and here's the talking point, why do they love the illegals more than they love the troops? Within 15 minutes of the government shutting down, Claire McCaskill hit the floor. And this was something that we did back during the 2013 shutdown. Claire McCaskill hits the floor. So I've got a sound clip here for you. From beginning to end, it's 2 minutes. I went ahead and cut out some of the middle stuff that was unimportant. But from the minute she introduces this bill onto the floor, asking for unanimous consent to pay the troops while the government is shut down, to make sure that they get paid, they get their death benefits and all the rest, from the minute it's introduced until the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, tells her to go to hell, it takes all of about 2 minutes.
Senator from Missouri.
Mr. President, this shouldn't take very long, but I was most disappointed tonight when the President of the United States put out a statement that tried to divide us based on party when it came to support of our military. There is no such division. Everyone in this chamber knows it. And so as we have in other instances where we have had a shutdown, I remember in 2013 we did this right off the bat. I want to make sure that tonight we send a very clear signal that we don't want one moment to pass with there being any uncertainty of any soldier anywhere in the world that they will be paid for the valiant work they do on behalf of our national security. I ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of calendar number 36, H.R. 1301, that the amendment at the desk providing for continuing appropriations for pay and death penalty benefits for members of the armed services be considered and agreed to, the bill as amended be considered read a third time and passed, and the motions to reconsider be considered made and laid upon the table with no intervening action or debate.
Is there objection?
Mr. President, reserving the right to object, well, therefore I object.
Objection is heard.
And just like that, it dies. Fox doesn't talk about it. Drudge doesn't write about it. Alex Jones doesn't talk about it. Hannity doesn't talk about it. They continue hammering on those same old talking points. They don't like the troops. They don't love the troops. I want to address another issue here. The 60-vote threshold. A budget, yeah. A budget, unless done through reconciliation, which is pretty hard to do, because budgets are a yearly thing. There is a 60-vote threshold. Yeah, that's true. So the Democrats deciding to not vote for either the CR or the budget or whatever the Republicans are trying to put forward, you could say, yeah. Yeah, they definitely play a role. They're not the blame, but they definitely can play a role in the government shutdown. But they're only supposed to vote for something if they believe that as a representative of their constituents, that it is in their constituents' best interest. And they didn't see this as in their best interest. See, and it's not a budget. It's a CR that he's trying to get passed. So just another couple of weeks to fight with the Democrats. And the military and everyone else is saying, we need an actual budget. We don't need another CR. We need an actual budget.
Well, I mean, you Republicans have the majority in the House. You have the majority in the Senate. You have the President of the United States. And there are Republicans who say they will vote against the CR. If the government shuts down, how can you blame the Democrats?
Well, you know, there's a 60-vote rule in the Senate, and increasingly Americans are aware of the 60-vote rule in the Senate.
Two things. There is a 60-vote rule, but there's also something known as the nuclear option. Now, no one likes the nuclear option, not the Democrats, not the Republicans, and here's why. The nuclear option allows you to pass something with 51 votes. And I remember when Bush was president, the Republicans had considered implementing the nuclear option just all the time. This is the new rule inside the government. Nuclear option, 51 votes, everything passes. But nobody wants that, and here's why. Because there are no permanent victories. No one's going to be in the majority forever. If you pass the nuclear option, then, well, you're in power now, but you might not be in power next year. And with the nuclear option, you take away the minority voice. And the reason we have things like the filibuster is to give the minority a voice. The reason why we have these 60-vote thresholds is to give the minority a voice. Because none of these parties won 100% of the vote. None of these senators or House members, none of them won 100% of the vote. But there's another option for the nuclear option, which is not a permanent implementation of it, but a one-day implementation of it. Say for one day, the nuclear option, and pass the CR, and keep the government open. And you're not going to hear belly aching from the Democrats about it, or you shouldn't, because they have done the same thing too. So they have that option. And then there is the CHIP program. I heard this and I was just stunned because I heard a Republican congressman say, we gave the Democrats CHIP, right? The CR that the Republicans were initially pushing had a 6-year extension of the CHIP program, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program. By the way, this brinksmanship brought to you by the Republican Party, because when CHIP lapsed, they decided not to renew it for more than a few months. That way it would coincide with the government shutdown, and they can blame the Democrats for that. And I said, now, wait a minute. The Children's Health Insurance Program. This is for people who don't make enough to buy private insurance, but make too much for the insurance for the lower class or for people in poverty. And it insures somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10 million children. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of kids. And is this really a Democratic program? We gave the Democrats the CHIP program. Wait a minute. Do you as a Republican? Easy. Don't answer too fast there, pro-lifer. Is this really the Democrats' issue? Does this not mean something to you as well? The good thing that does come out of this is about that program. So we got the 6-year extension with the CR. And where's Mitch McConnell, notorious liar, has said that they will discuss DACA in the Senate, which means they're not going to discuss DACA in the Senate. And if the CHIP program was really so important, so they shut down the government and they go, the troops and the children, the Democrats hate the troops and the children. The CHIP program could have passed as a solo bill on its own. This is what we refer to as a 90-10 issue. That means 90% of people are for it, 10% of people are against it. It's an issue that everybody loves. The troops are a 90-10 issue. Bam, bam. These things could have been passed. The Democrats got accused of holding children and the troops hostage, while the Republicans control the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. We got CHIP. That's true. Even though I see that as an issue that affects everybody, because everybody has children. But the Republicans got to win the PR war, and the Democrats got the blame for the shutdown. Now, I suppose if you take Trump's number, 38% and 18%, that's more than 50% that blame either the president or the Republican Party. So that's a majority. But they see it, they already see the president as incompetent. So between the Democrats and the incompetent president, that's almost 80% that blames the Democrats or the president.
Senator, is there any way that you and people like you can sign on to this continuing resolution without implicit DACA legislation?
It's not even just DACA. It is the needs of, we have 30,000 vacancies in the Veterans Administration have to be filled. We have community health centers not been funded in 3.5 months. 27 million people are worried about where they're going to get their health care. DACA is one of the issues, not the only issue. The bottom line is the Republican leadership has got to do its job. You just said it a moment ago. We don't have many constitutional responsibilities, but to run the damn government is one of the responsibilities.
That is one of the key ones.
We do have.
Senator Bernard Sanders, the man who should have been president, seems to be about the only one that's working. And there is the other issue. The thing that Senator Sanders pointed out there is that it's not just about DACA. There are tons and tons of things that are not being addressed by the president, that are not being addressed by the Congress. And you say, but Melvin, you don't like the president. Are you sure you want the president to go to work? No. No, I don't, obviously. But these things cannot just languish. Something has to happen with them. We've got all these vacancies. And I talked about on last week's show about how the president is in private conversation in the White House, openly talking about how a terrorist attack might be a good thing, because this might give them what they want in the 20, maybe the bloodbath that's supposed to be the 2018 midterms isn't going to be so bad if, say, we have a terrorist attack and people look to us, the Republican hawks, as the only people that could possibly protect them. And the fact that he's leaving all these positions open, the fact that he's not taking the job seriously, the fact that if fire and fear is to be believed, the guy spends the vast majority of his day not working, but watching TV and tweeting. Live tweeting the things that he sees on Fox News. I know that I'm not hot on the way this guy's doing his job. And my assumption, if you're listening to this show, is that you're not that hot on the way he's doing his job right now either. But I feel like if things are moving and people are involved, at some point, even if not at every stop, eventually those better heads are going to prevail. But the president is in a bit of a crisis mode right now. And is just only focusing on the white supremacists that elected him. And those white supremacists are becoming much, much more bold. The number of people that were murdered by white supremacists in 2018, and this just came out, far more people in 2018 than they killed in 2017. It's growing every year. And they're running around without their hoods now, and they're being openly racist in public, and they're starting to feel like they're the majority, even though they're not. One of these days, I'll have to get into the 3% thing with you, but there's a story that comes out of the Maine Press Herald, and this is an example. Maine town manager says that he won't quit over white supremacist posts. So, Jackman, Maine, their town manager is a man named Thomas Kosinski, and he's recognizing that his last days as being an employee of his small northwestern Maine town, his last days are probably at hand, but says he doesn't have any plans to quit his job. Kosinski also said he's sorry for any negative impact that his views have had on the town and local businesses. He said that he was not motivated by hate and, of course, completely denies being a racist. So, what did he do? So, Jackman, population 862, is in Somerset County. It's near the Canadian border. The town bills itself as a tourist-friendly region on its website. Kaczynski, who was hired in June, this according to the Maine Press Herald, started posting his ideas on his website in November and has regularly posted anti-Islamic, anti-feminist comments on Gab, a social networking service for the far right. It's a white supremacist website. Kaczynski said living in northern Maine, where most people are white, allows him to experience the joys of living in a monoculture. He said he opposes Islam because it's not compatible with Western culture. On the New Albion website, he wrote, "I believe all people, living as they choose in free determination for the people of New England, our folk are white people of European ancestry ideas, emphasizing the value of work, communing with nature and a society based upon order. While I am not an absolutist on race understanding, the many complications created by the American system, I do believe to the extent we voluntarily separate, the happier every group will be as they regain self-determination." He also went on to attack feminists and pointed out it's no accident that unattractive women make up the vast majority of feminists. He has a Patreon page. This is real. Patreon, not Patreon, Patreon. And this is where you give money to white supremacist causes. This is all real. Now, he's the mayor of a small town, population 867. But he's promoting the idea that we voluntarily separate ourselves by race. And this kind of thing is happening more and more. Now, these folks are absolutely not the majority. But when folks like us, when folks like us say that we're just going to stay home on election day, we're just not going to turn out because harump, or we're going to write in Bernie Sanders' name, or we're just not going to get involved with our local and Democratic parties, these folks become the voices. These folks become the voices that everybody hears. They don't hear your voice. They don't hear my voice. They hear Ted Kaczynski, who wants the United States to voluntarily start separating themselves into races. And he wants to kick out all the Muslims and feminists. My, my. Back in a moment.
Well, congratulations to Donald Trump, who managed to keep our government open for almost one whole year. The government shut down at midnight last night over disagreements regarding immigration. President Trump has blamed minority leader Chuck Schumer for the shutdown because Trump never misses a chance to blame a minority. Also, why is shutting down our entire government even an option? America's been around for 240 years. Maybe it's time we just buy our government instead of leasing it month to month. This is people's lives, not a Kia Sorento. Even production on House of Cards didn't shut down after the main guy was accused of being a full predator. If a fake government can keep going, so can we. Also, in that fake government, they got rid of the sexual predator president and got a female president instead. So just something to think about, just an idea.
One of the biggest complaints I heard while Obama was our president is how confidence in the world, how nobody respects us anymore. Everyone looks down on us. Confidence in the world is just so low. The biggest critics of the Obama administration were, of course, authoritarians who saw us as not being authoritarian. My God, they really wish we'd be authoritarian like Russia and like Turkey, which, by the way, wasn't authoritarian recently, but has become over the last number of years. And there's any number of countries where they're moving more and more and more towards authoritarianism. But the vast majority of the world still sees democracy as the better idea, whether they get to practice it or not. They still see freedom as more important than authoritarianism. And the confidence that they have in America as a free and open society, the confidence that they have in our leadership. We were told under President Obama how it was just through the floor because, my God, they don't like him. But it was not true. It was never true. Yeah, the authoritarians didn't like him, but quite a few of us did. So there's an article in The Guardian, the headline, World's Confidence in U.S. Leadership Under Trump at a New Low. Quoting here, global confidence in U.S. leadership has fallen to a new low, and the country now ranks below China in worldwide approval ratings, according to a new Gallup poll. The survey of opinion in 134 countries, and I always hear from conservatives, who cares what they think? You seem to care what they think when Obama was president. You made up your numbers, but you seem to care. The survey, an opinion of 134 countries, showed a record collapse in approval for the U.S. role in the world, from 48% under Obama to 30% after 1 year of Trump, the lowest level Gallup has recorded since beginning its global leadership poll over a decade ago. The poll showed that Trump has averaged a 39% approval rating in the country since his inauguration. The previous low was held by Bill Clinton, whose first-year average was actually 10 points higher. The latest study confirms some of the worst fears of foreign policy analysts in the U.S. and Europe, that Trump's America First approach, by the way, America First, that's a white supremacist slogan. It is stunning to me that he gets to say that every night on television and nobody challenges the fact that it's a white supremacist slogan. His America First approach, combined with his volatile and irascible personality, is weakening cohesion among Western democracies in the face of a growing challenge from autocracies in Russia and China and the rise of illiberal democracies and xenophobic nationalism inside Europe. Germany is now seen as the global leader by more people, 41% of the sample, with China in second place at 31%. Russia has 27%. In just under half the world's countries, 65 out of 134, U.S. standing has collapsed by 10 percentage points or more. Some of the biggest losses were among Washington's closest allies in Western Europe, Australia, and Latin America. One of the sharpest declines in confidence in U.S. leadership was in the U.K., where it dropped by 26 percentage points. A third of Britain's question in the new poll expressed approval, with 63% expressing disapproval.
This is completely unfair.
The problem starts from the top and have to get solved from the top. The president is the leader, and he's got to get everybody in the room, and he's got to lead.
It's stunning hearing Mitch McConnell, as you heard at the beginning of that, it's so unfair. My God, it's so unfair. This is the same guy who stopped hundreds of Obama's judges from going through the Senate. Hundreds. And now that Trump is president, is trying to find a way to get those judges through without even giving them hearings. They can't do it. Constitutionally, they can't do it. But they do a lot of things that constitutionally they're not supposed to be able to do. And then, of course, held an entire seat on the Supreme Court open for an entire year, leading to tons of deadlocks on the court, 4-4 deadlocks on the court. And, of course, put Neil Gorsuch on the bench. And Neil Gorsuch is now having dinner. And this is real. You just look for the things that Neil Gorsuch is tagged in on Twitter. Some of the higher profile accounts that he's tagged in. He's now having dinner with people who have business in front of the court. It's absolutely stunning. It's so unfair. They held this seat open for a year. And then as soon as Trump became president, they put Gorsuch into it. And Gorsuch is running the damn thing for profit. We were told that this president is a deal maker. When the government shut down back in 2013, this president, who wasn't president then, this is the president's fault. This is Obama's fault. The buck stops with him. He needs to get in there and he needs to be a leader.
They're not going to be talking about Boehner. They're not going to be talking about Reid. They're not going to be talking about any of these people. They're going to be talking about Obama.
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead.
And he's the supreme deal maker. But every single time he got in the room, right, they tried to bring him in on the conversation. Or even they had a conversation, but it was without him. He was across the street tweeting and blowing up the deals that they were trying to make. So when they finally did get something passed, They passed it because they didn't allow Trump to be a part of any of it.
This is like giving you a bowl of doggy doo, put a cherry on top and call it a chocolate sundae. This is nothing. It's really almost like an amateur hour.
And then, of course, Trump is screaming about the wall. It's stunning to me that this wall is a part of the conversation at all. And that Trump is telling us that we need to pay for the damn wall. After saying that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. But is this a real conversation? A freaking wall. We're talking about this. Every time he said this on the campaign trail, I said, that's not real. That's not serious. He won't become president, so I don't have to worry about that.
Which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
Well, what about of all of them? I mean, Scott
fake
Walker.
Fake laughter from the audience.
Scott Walker, would you say?
Of the ones who aren't declared, no, Romney Walker is my ticket.
Romney Walker. See, but last time you said if we nominate Romney, we'll definitely lose.
And I was right, but.
Well, why will he win this?
That was two
third
years
time's the
in
charm?
Advance, and it was because actually third time was the charm for Reagan.
Right.
It was because it's very hard to take out an incumbent. And the reason I supported Christie back then, and I don't now, was because, you know, he's so flashy and idiosyncratic that we probably were going to lose, but the only shot we had was this wild, idiosyncratic guy. I think Romney would crush Hillary.
I would do anything for
Though
Trump
if you ran,
Christie. Trump Christie.
If you ran Bernie Sanders, it would be much tougher.
Bernie Sanders?
It would be much tougher to beat him than Hillary.
You think would be a better candidate than Hillary?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
because he would
cares
excite
about the
base. The
American middle class working class. Hillary doesn't. She's like the
Ooh.
Elected Republican. She cares about the Chamber of Commerce.
I don't like Ann Coulter, but I'll be listening the next time she makes a prediction. And it was weird to hear Bill Maher call for a ticket that likely still would have won, considering that the way we were divided in 2016. So back to the wall. So John Kelly, who works in the cabinet, has been out there in the media saying that this damn wall is not going to happen. And if any part of it happens, then it is not Mexico who's going to be paying for it, which is the exact opposite of what the president has been saying.
And I say, I would build a wall bigger, better, stronger than any wall.
You know, there's been an evolutionary process that this president has gone through.
How are you going to build a 1,900-mile wall?
Very easy. I'm a builder. That's easy.
They all say things during the course of campaigns that may or may not be fully informed.
What's more complicated is building a building that's 95 stories tall.
He has changed the way he's looked at a number of things.
The wall just got 10 feet higher. We love it.
Even the wall, once we briefed him.
Oh, and by the way, Mexico can pay for the wall, just so you understand.
And Mexico's not going to pay.
One of the groups is saying, you can't get Mexico to pay. How foolish of Mr. Trump.
We have some ideas on how things like visa fees.
Of course they'll pay. If you have the right guy negotiating that, they'll pay.
It's possible that we could get the revenue from Mexico, but not directly from their government.
We're not going to be the stupids anymore. We're the stupids. We're known as the stupids.
Part of the strategy has to be governing. And the other part of it, unfortunately, and you can give me a call, Democrats, if you need the help, part of the strategy has to be PR and marketing. Here's the way the wall should have been handled. And by the way, the wall is nothing more than a physical manifestation of racism, something that the Deep South can look at and go, yep, there ain't gonna no more brown folks getting through there. It's not effective, and it's not going to work. And no one's coming to America already. And it's not just people from Mexico that aren't coming to America. It's people from all over the world that aren't coming to America anymore. I don't know if you heard about this. 40,000 travel agents right, were people that worked in the travel industry. 40,000 of them were laid off last year. Why? Because American tourism is through the floor. And that's going to have a gigantic effect on the economy. You aren't seeing it now, but I don't think people realize, first of all, how much we depend now depend on these people, these undocumented folks that are here to pay taxes. Because they do. They come here, they work, and most of them pay taxes. The billionaires that the Republicans are protecting, they don't pay taxes. As a matter of fact, they just got a gigantic tax break. Of course, the other thing that we depend on is tourism. And 40,000 professionals that work in that industry got laid off last year because tourism is through the floor. Nobody wants to come here. Nobody wants to see the train wreck that is our country and our government. And they don't want to see you either, Skeeter.
Remember the old line, the whole world is watching?
Yeah.
Well, the whole world is watching. And it raises major questions. First of all, who would want to rely on a United States that goes through this? If you're an ally, it sends real messages that we can't be predictable.
Right.
If you're a foe, why should you respect us? If you're a developing country, why would anyone want to emulate us?
Absolutely.
Why would anyone
not
basically want to adopt a democratic model? So what you're seeing is the Russians are being very forceful in their foreign policy. The Chinese are eating our lunch in Asia. They're offering a different political economic system while we're going through this.
There's an article over at the New York Times website called Will Democracy Survive Trump? And it talks about two different books. One of those books is written by neoconservative David Frum, who used to be one of George W. Bush's speechwriters and helped coin the phrase Axis of Evil. And he wrote a book called Trumpocracy. And then there's another book called The Corruption of the American Republic. That book is written by Steve Levitsky and David Zablatt. So they take two different paths. Of course, the one, and I say of course because I'm starting to see this more and more, where conservatives are going that this is not my party. So over on MSNBC, Morning Joe works in the morning. He used to be a Republican senator. Nicole Wallace works in the afternoons. She was talking the other day about how she used to work on Republican campaigns against the Obama administration. Steve Schmidt, who used to be McCain's campaign manager, now works on MSNBC. So there are all these Republicans that work over there on MSNBC, but you wouldn't know with the way they talk about the Trump administration because they're not marching in lockstep. Every one of them is working on that channel as opposed to something like Fox because they would like to honestly see their own party come back. They don't recognize the Republican Party as what it is right now. And those are the kind of relationships that we need to forge. So, of course, the book, The Corruption of the American Republic, written by the two gentlemen, they take the approach in their book where it gets a little wonky. I read the review of the book. It gets kind of wonky, but there's some good ideas in there. But David Frum's book, who is a neocon, he gets this hair on fire tone in his book about the Trump administration. It says that we're not likely to survive the Trump presidency. So I'm going to take more of an in-the-middle approach because, yeah, we face a pretty serious danger right now, not just from Trump and not just from the Republicans, but there's nothing that's happening with respect to either one of them that we don't already know. So that is the known threat. Of course, the unknown is the fact that there are still people who say, you know what, politics is not my thing. It's not one of my interests. I can't make a difference. I don't need to get out there. This will take care of itself. This is bad, but who cares? I can't do anything. Or maybe they're saying, you know what, these kinds of things have happened in the past. These kinds of things will likely happen in the future. There's ebbs and flows to this stuff. You know what? This will take care of itself. All of that thinking is insane. It's absolutely dangerous. We can't think that way. We need to see each and every one of us as part of the solution. Or part of the problem. Every one of us needs to be involved in this. I'm closer to a run for office right now than I've ever been in my life, because you, as a good Republican, as a middle-of-the-road Republican, or even just center-right Republican, you know, not someone who's a far-right Nazi, you think you're unhappy with your party? I'm pretty damn unhappy with some of the folks that I'm learning about so far that are running for these Democratic seats. And I'm glad that they're out there and that they're running. But man, can we not find more inspiring people? Is this the best we've got? How about you? Yeah, you that are listening right now. What do you think the requirements are for you to run for city council? What do you think the requirements are for running for the House? Or how about running for the Senate? Start at the House. Start down there and work your way up to the Senate. Whatever you think the qualifications are, I want you to remember that there are guys in the Senate that do not think that the moon landing happened. There are guys in the Senate that do not think that climate change is real. There are guys in the Senate and in the House and in the White House that think that God, not you and I, God chose President Trump to lead us. They're absolutely insane. And they're not there because the government is bad or stupid or ineffective or just lets these kind of people in. They're there because they found a constituency of morons that helped them get there. My take, yeah, we'll survive the Trump presidency. He's a threat, but there's larger threats. See, Trump is dangerous, but he's also kind of stupid. The real concern is if someone gets in there and who sees the world the same way that Trump sees the world, if that person is smart at all and knows what they're doing, that's when this is going to become a real threat.
Donald Trump hopefully is an anomaly, and our country will endure and we'll get past this. There'll be a lot of damage. We'll get past it. But if we don't get past it, then someone who doesn't have Donald Trump's deficit, somebody who really is smart, somebody who really does know things, and someone who shares his values, which are aggressive, self-centered, and focused on money, as his son himself said yesterday, then we could slide into being a very different society. Our individual liberties and our freedoms mm-hmm. stem from our government, from our Constitution, and from the enforcement of its rules. And so it really matters whether we respond here. You know, griping and moaning and posting on the internet doesn't get you anywhere.
This is a call. This is the same call that I'm beginning to end every show with. These words are true. And you can believe them. You know what you have to do now. Get to work, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Cannot Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Stuttering a little bit, mouth's dry. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android listeners. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can sign up so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or committee, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for being here each and every week with me. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, go sign up to run for office. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.